The main point of the armed services is to wreck things and kill the enemy. Often bombers and long-range missiles don't do the job. Sometimes soldiers and Marines need to get close. Recent losses show these tip-of-the-spear warfighters may not have the training and equipment they need. Joining me for perspective on the Pentagon's new Close Combat Lethality Task Force, Army Major John Spencer, Deputy Director of the Modern War Institute at West Point and former Army Ranger. Major Spencer, good to have you on.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
What has happened in the last, say, 15 years or so when there has been a lot of close combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, and now we have the recent incident in Niger? What's changed for these close-in forces that are sustaining losses now?
Yeah, I don't know, let's say, if anything's changed. I think the visibility of that, you know, 90% of the Americans that die at the hands of the enemy are these close combat troops, the ones that are, you know, getting, as Secretary Mattis says, intimate with the enemy to kill him. And some people, you know, kind of felt that, but until the statistics really show, you know, data that we may not have been prioritizing them as a function, as in a group of people like we should have. And it's not just last 15 years. It's probably been going on since Vietnam.
Yeah, so what do you think this task force can look at to increase the lethality and, I guess, concomitantly reduce its own losses in these types of situations?
I'm really excited about the task force just because they're going from bottom up, with the lowest from individual soldiers to the infantry squad. We'll look at not only their lethality on, you know, what type of weapons do they have, but what are the manning policies that we use specific for these group of individuals, men and women. Should they apply across the whole army, or should we be more selective on how we recruit, assess, and train these specific individuals? Not just how we, what the weapons we give them, what type of assets are we giving them so they can see the enemy. I'm really excited that the task force is going to look at the whole spectrum.
And getting to the people that actually wage this kind of war, often you hear about the Rangers, such as your former unit, and also special forces of the other armed services. And they're famous for the training regimes and selectivity that they employed for people to get into them. In close combat, are there other people sometimes that have not had that training that are also alongside those people, or is it strictly the special forces types of people we're talking about?
No, so how do you define close combat? So special forces, Rangers are a part of the special operations community, and then infantry, both Army and Marines, that's that category of people. But the special operations community has been doing so much, and they are, like you said, that selective, that resourced and everything. And it doesn't, some of those don't apply to the regular or what you'd call general purpose infantry close combat forces. And because of that, I mean, we've overused some of the special operations community, and now Secretary Mattis says, let's focus on the whole group. And it's striking that it's only 4% of the just over 4,000 or 40,000 people we're talking about out of 2 million, that we're going to cut some resources and prioritize this whole group of people.
Let's talk about some of the training that they get. Could there be something that changes in the way they're trained? Again, not the special forces, which have an additional training regime, which I understand is quite rigorous beyond what everybody else gets. Is there something that everybody else could get that could get them more equipped to handle the situations that the special forces encounter that they might have to help in?
Absolutely. So they're already starting to talk about extending, whether it's the very basic training that let's say somebody just joins the military, a private, or kind of the heart of the organization, those non-commissioned officers. So extend that training, keep the organizations together longer, because we have rotational kind of personnel policies that kind of sometimes can counteract building a effective organization or the cohesion of a group if you rotate everybody out every few years or every year or so, where those practices aren't applied to other, special operations community per se. Training is one of the, is very specific. So let's be more selective on who we put in those formations. Let's train them better, give them better equipment, give them better assets, and make them so there's no more fair fights. I mean, you mentioned the Special Operations and Rangers. I was once a part of them. They're feared on the battlefield. But the regular infantrymen may show up today, let's say, against a near peer like Russia or China, and be over what we call overmatched. And Secretary Mattis said, never again.
We're speaking.
That's personal scar tissue. And when U.S. forces, especially the close combat, if I can see the enemy, I should be putting fear in the enemy because I'm so much better than them.
We're speaking with Army Major John Spencer, Deputy Director of the Modern War Institute at West Point and former Army Ranger. And aside from training and cohesion, is there also maybe a technological update that might be needed? I don't know what the particular weapons they use are in Special Forces. Are they better and more lethal than the weapons used by everybody else? Because I know it's taken the Army something like 15 years to come up with a new pistol.
Yes. Yeah, so Zach, and it's not an easy problem. I mean, you know, the way the acquisitions and the Army buys things, you know, if I buy a rifle, it's going to be the rifle for everybody in the Army, but not necessarily. Or if I, you know, certain assets. And one of the things we recommended in what the task force is saying is there are other systems, like let's say an aircraft or a helicopter, or that is treated as a unit of measure. And, you know, it has to be briefed to Congress on what's the progress of it. And you know, is it the most advanced, most capable thing that we have? And we argue that the close combat forces should be the same thing. It should be a separate function looked at as almost a major program so that it does have the most advanced weapon, night vision, drones, so that, like you said, if you put them on the battlefield are they the best?
And let's back up even to the recruitment point, because that's always a challenge for the armed services, maybe especially the Army, and the way the nation seems to be trending in terms of just weight and mental health and so forth, crime. It's getting harder and harder to get the people in the front door in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's a major challenge for all the services, the Army, Marines, everybody. And we argue pretty much, you know, there is some residual, like, World War II thought about the infantry. So, you know, even the intellectual scores, when you bring those people in, you test them for their physical, mental capabilities, the lowest level sometimes in joking was, okay, well, at least they can go do infantry. And what the task force has recognized, if they're doing 90% of the dying, then maybe that should be reassessed and looked at differently.
What is happening at West Point that might be informing the curriculum of any of this, or is it too early?
No, I think with my organization specifically, which was stood up by our superintendent less than 3 years ago, called the Modern War Institute, with a specific focus to get those lessons from, you know, whether it's to Ukraine or in Iraq against ISIS, and bring those back to the curriculum. So from day one, we're giving them the lessons from what's going on the battlefield today, so that we can be, you know, learn and be ahead of the next fight.
Army Major John Spencer is Deputy Director of the Modern War Institute at West Point and a former Army Ranger. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.